Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Peterson Car Stories podcast. I am Daniel Valdez, and today we have a very special guest. He is a television host, a DJ, radio personality, an investor, entrepreneur. I'm sure a lot more. We'll find out.
Well, you forgot the most important thing, a car fan, a car freak, right?
Yes.
Thanks for having me, Daniel. I'm excited to be here, man. This is the coolest probably podcast, I guess, facility in the world, being in top of the Peterson, right?
Yes. Thank you for being here. I've been wanting to get you on here and tell your story, your passions, all of that. But just to start it off, can you tell the audience where you grew up?
Yeah, I was born in New York, lived all over as a kid growing up, but really my hometown is Minneapolis. I grew up, we moved to Minnesota when I was about like 5 years old. So that was where kind of all my first real memories were in my real childhood growing up was until I moved out here to LA when I was about 17. So Minneapolis hometown, but LA native at this point.
Cool. We asked this question to everyone. What's your earliest car memory?
Earliest car memory, man. I'm trying to remember. I remember my earliest car fantasy as a kid. You know, you don't know everything. So I was always like, why is the Mercedes so much money? And my parents were like, well, they're really higher quality, higher materials. So I was like, oh, great. So if I make enough money, I can buy a Mercedes. So I never have to buy another car. So I'm like, I want then a green Mercedes convertible, right? Because then that'll be my car the rest of my life. So that was what I fantasized of as a kid, is getting a green Mercedes convertible. I actually ended up getting, I never got a green Mercedes convertible, but I had a AMG GTR, the Magno Green Hell color. So so came close. So still, I guess I still have something to dream for. But that was like, I guess my earliest, if you had to say, memory would be that. Yeah, fantasizing of what I, you know, wanted one day.
Yeah. You said, you know, you moved out here to Los Angeles when you were 17. Did you have actually a first car before that back in Minnesota?
Yeah. So I got my first car was a Hyundai, a Tiburon, which actually looked cool, right? Mm-hmm. So like that was my first car and I thought it was so cool. And before I was DJing in Minnesota and on radio and selling mixtapes and starting like some like small like hustles and entrepreneurs. So I'd saved up my money right before I moved to Los Angeles. You'll love this part. And I'd bought a Cadillac Escalade. I think I bought a 2000 Escalade and it was 02 or something when it came out, 01 or 02. They just switched the body style. So the new body style was out, but I bought an old one. And being in Minnesota, right? Like being 17, having an Escalade was
the man.
And I came to, I was like, man, I'm going to come to LA and stunt and like do that. And then I came out here and actually it's funny. One of the first people I met out here is a guy named Ben Baller.
Oh yeah.
Because we were selling shoes. And I pulled up to meet with him because he'd bought all these SB Dunks and I'd bought a bunch too. I was like flipping sneakers and stuff before it was a thing. And we went up to meet up and I pulled up in the Escalade. I thought it was going to be awesome. And Ben's like, oh, you got the Escalade. Oh, dope. I got the new one. So I was like real quick got humbled, which was needed. And I remember Ben Baller, but so it was fun. It was quite a come up for me, but then also a reality check. It's like, wasn't the new body style. And also at that time, the new body style was, the first Escalade was really just a rebadge of GMC or Chevy. This was the first they kind of like made, like it was the real Escalade that everybody probably remembers. So it was a significant jump, both in prestige as well as price.
Was it like silver or white?
Mine was black.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say.
And it had like, it was a little less, it was least desirable, right? It had a bunch of miles. It had like, I got it used, obviously, and cheap, but it had like the open doors instead of like the smooth line. So it had like the doors in the middle on the back. So it was a good car at the time, but yeah.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Ben Baller because he agreed to come on. It's just scheduling, trying to get him on.
Of course.
But yeah, rewind, but how did you get into music? And that's, for our audience, that's kind of how you started everything, right?
Yeah, music's my foundation. So like, you know, growing up, it's interesting. You know, my grandmother did radio. My mother did radio. My father was an incredible pianist and musician. My mom actually toured the world as a singer. With Up With People. So, it kind of ran in my blood, my family. Mm-hmm. I got into it in high school as a freshman. My school actually had a recording engineering program.
Oh, wow.
And I just took that as an elective. Yeah, somebody built a studio or donated it to the school. And it was totally out of the blue. Like, I had no expectation of it. And once I started learning engineering, I'd always, as a kid, going back, taking it back a step. Like, I had like a CD changer, so I'd always like sequence songs and things, and I thought that was cool. But when I took like this recording engineering class, I realized like oh, wow, there's more to do that. And that kind of put me in the path for DJing and gave me the foundation. And from that, I went and bought a turntable. I stole my dad's record player and broke it in a night, like trying to scratch on it, not knowing those things. And from that moment on, then that's just what I knew I was gonna do. But I was fortunate enough that, again, that's why I'm so passionate about arts being in school. If I hadn't gone to St. Paul Central High School, and if they did not have that one class and they didn't have a recording arts program in there, I wouldn't be here today, right? Like, I just kind of fell into it and then found that passion. And the second that I started like doing that, it was almost instantaneous. I just laser focused on that and knew that's what I was going to do for my career.
Who was some of your earliest musical influences?
There were so many. Man, there were so many. I mean, I was fortunate enough to, and I was just thinking about this, right? Like, I've been so blessed and fortunate to see so many icons, like, and work with them over the years growing up. I mean, I listened to everything, right? Like, from rock side to, you know, my first concert, I think my mom was working security at, was Alanis Morissette. So like, and it was actually one of her first early shows too. Now, the first show I did, you know, big concert I did was like opening up as a DJ, like very early opener, for like Scarface. So, and hip hop is the foundation. That's how it got. So I think hip hop is the core of everything that I've done. But you know, it was really an eclectic mix of that. And that's why I've been fortunate enough to tour with Prince, Chris Cornell, to obviously all the hip hop stuff that I've done, and TV and radio. So it's, you know, I've never just liked one thing. And as you can see, I do multiple things. Like, I get a little bored if it was just one thing, but so it's kind of been all over the place.
So you talked about flipping sneakers, you know, early on, but I've heard in the past interview that it was actually the PlayStation.
Yeah.
And it was very important for your, I guess, your growth, you could say, and just opening opportunities. But can you tell the audience why the PlayStation, what was so special about it?
Man, the PlayStation, if it wasn't for PS2, it's another one of those stories that I wouldn't be here today. Like, life, and I always say, like, success and luck is opportunity meets preparation. So I was always just naturally entrepreneurial. I didn't want to work a real job. So I was selling mixtapes, you know, selling sneakers. Also, at the time, I'd sell whatever, like, I could make money on. So all my friends in high school worked at Best Buy or Target. And at the time, it was the Xbox and PS2 that was coming out that were selling for, you know, double the money on eBay if you could get your hands on it. So I'd slide them $20 to tell me when the shipments were coming in. They'd be like, hey, we just got one in today. They'd like sneak out and call me, and I'd go buy as many as I could and sell them for double the money. So it happened to be the CEO of Loud and Sony Records, ironically, he couldn't get a PlayStation, Steve Rifkin, was meeting with this guy that I was kind of interning for, and it took me under his wing, Stretch Armstrong, iconic, legendary DJ. And Stretch was like, Steve happened to blurt out, because he's kind of crazy, Steve's my guy, but he's like, I need a PS, his son's name's Alex, I need a PlayStation 2 for Alex. So and Steve is, oh, listen, he's like, this little kid in Minneapolis, right, that might have one, let me hit him. So he sent me a message, and I was like, he's like, hey, can you get a PS2 for Steve Rifkin? And I was like, yeah, of course. And I didn't even think, I was like, I'll hook him up, right? Like, I realized the value of networking. So I was like, yeah, of course, I'll hook. And Steve, I think he paid me too. He's like, no, I don't want it free, I'll pay for it. I was like, no, you're good. Yeah. Like, you're Steve Rifkin. And I just stayed in touch, right? Like, and because of that relationship that I got, like hooking him up with a PS2 for Christmas for his son, I then like ultimately, you know, a few months later, had a bunch of ideas and sent him a proposal on what he was doing wrong, I thought, with Loud Records, his label at the time. And he loved it so much. He was like, come fly with me, meet with me. So I flew to New York, ditched high school, and met with him, and he offered me a job. And that's why I came out here when I was, you know, so young. I figured a way to graduate high school early. But if it wasn't for, again, that PlayStation, I wouldn't have connected with Steve, and I wouldn't have gotten that job and moved to LA when I was 17.
So what was that job here in LA?
It was funny. Steve, first day, he sits me in an office. Typical Steve, if you know him. He's one of the great talent finders, right? He found Wu-Tang Clan, you name it, one of great A&Rs in music history, most successful, you know, hip hop record, you know, street hip hop record label of all time, Loud Records. Sits me in the office and he's like, you know what to do? I never had a real job either, because I've never like even worked like a quarter, like, because I was selling PlayStations and shoes. Yeah. So sat me in the office on my first day. He's like, you know what to do? And I was like, yeah, and had no idea, right? So he just kind of like threw me in the mix, but I always work well, just so you kind of throw me in any situation and I figure it out. That's, you know, one of my kind of skills, I think. So from that, you know, he had me help, you know, figure out how to flip his marketing company and then launch his new record label, SRC, where we had David Banner, Akon, a great Terror Squad. So just an incredible run in the early 2000s. And to witness that firsthand from an industry icon was, you know, the best education, better than any college could ever been for me.
Of course.
But yeah, it was literally thrown in the mix. It was just like, what title do you want? I think I put marketing executive on my card or something. So yeah.
with that first couple of years of experience, who's like the first person you met that was just like, damn, like,
ooh,
there's, and you had to like keep your cool. Was there one?
Yeah, there's so many. I mean, with Steve, right? Like, I remember, I mean, I was 18 years old. Like, we went up to take a meeting. He was close to Phil Knight. He'd done a lot of marketing at Nike. And I was a big sneakerhead, right? Yep. Big into sports. And we went up to Portland and flew in a private, my first time ever in a private jet to meet with Phil Knight's team, right? The head of Nike basketball at the time. And then at night, we're hanging out with like Rasheed Wallace and going to like a strip club with him. The Blazers were known as like all those things. And like watching these guys, going to like a Nike headquarters, like it was like a dream come true as a kid, being in a private jet. Then hanging out with these pro athletes was like, what the hell is going on? And coming out here, still like interacting with all these guys is just insane, right? Like the fact that I talk to these people that I grew up like idolizing, right? And watching and listening to. And, you know, I'm fortunate to see so much, right? Like I've been able to go on the road with Prince and these guys, right? Like it's like, that's still a trip and I still can't believe it, right? Like, and you know, I cherish those memories forever.
You mentioned sports. Before we get into it, so you've done a lot of DJ sets for, I think, University of Michigan, if I'm not corrected. Was it the Vikings also?
Do the Vikings. You do the Rams now, too.
So Rams, like, and also you involved with NASCAR a little bit.
Yep. First DJ ever. I think I was the first DJ ever live during a race, which is a wild stat. So,
but before that, I read somewhere like one of your first early campaigns was with actually a car company, Chrysler.
Yeah, you could do.
What did you do? What was it all about?
So when I after I moved out here, I was working for Steve, and then I left to launch my own marketing agency. Steve was focused more on his record label stuff, and I was doing all these like brand deals and things. So the first client I launched a company with my partner Sam, and the first client that we had was Daimler Chrysler, and they had just come out. They were trying to make themselves cool in the U.S. They weren't a cool car brand at the time. And they had this product that we thought actually could really work. It was led by the first was the redesigned Chrysler 300, the car that looked like a Bentley, infamously. followed up by like the Dodge with the Dodge Magnum. The Charger came later, and then there was another revised Jeep. I forget which one offhand. But we basically pitched them a whole. I'd been doing for Steven stuff a lot of product placement. We kind of reinvented the way product placement was done with other products. We're putting like T-Mobile Sidekick and music videos and sneakers and things along with athletes. Before, like, people realized what product placement was a thing. Now it's so obvious, and now people are getting paid to post that. We weren't paying anybody. So the same thing, when they had that car, we're like, wow, we can make that cool by getting it to everybody who's anybody. And we followed this blueprint and put it in so many music videos. We did these really cool street activations where that was a really bold car. We'd pull up like a fleet of 20 of them and park it, just literally like shut down Wilshire Boulevard, like drive around the Peterson and on a Saturday afternoon when everybody's coming, and just to get attention. We pull up in front of clubs and restaurants and just do these guerrilla marketing campaigns to get it out there, and it worked really well. And that was, you know, it was so cool to be. We were going to Irvine, where their headquarters or where their regional headquarters were at the time, and working that, but just being able to drive, and we had a fleet of all these cars, right? So I'm like 19 years old, like with keys to like 60 cars, and they all looked really cool, right? Like we had them all like custom and things like that. And at the time, it was like the hottest car in the street. And we like, yeah, it looked like a Bentley, but we embraced that, right? And we put it in everybody from 50 Cent. We put the Magnum, one of the first videos it was in was with Game, How We Do, with, you know, his record. Yeah. And it became like the centerpiece of that video. We did so many cool things with it. And now those days are kind of gone because people have figured it out, right? Yeah. Now people get paid to do that, as they rightfully should. But that was kind of our way to sneak in. And it was a cool thing. And then we had all these artists hitting us up because they wanted cars. So we were hooking them up. So it was a great time.
Awesome. Yeah, I actually had a Sidekick back in the day. And it was basically because of that reason, product placement.
That's what it was, man.
And it's, I have to go back and watch the Game video. He's one of my favorite.
Yeah, it was great. You'll see it's a dark video on a black Magnum. It was the first Magnum in the U.S. before it had actually come out. And we put it on before they'd released him over here. So he was the first in that. Then we had a bunch of other ones. We had 50 and the 300. Yeah, we had those all over the place. Like,
so after the Escalade, now that you're working a little bit more, what did you get after?
Man, I had a couple other cars. My first, like, after, you know, I started making a little bit, I've been upgraded and got a modern Escalade. So I got the EXT, which was the truck bed version, right? Mm-hmm. That was cool and all the hip hop stuff. So I got that car. Man, I've had so many things. I really liked Cadillacs at the time. So I got one of the early CTSs. And then we were doing all the stuff for Daimler Chrysler. So for those while I was just, you know, driving those, cause we had, like, you know, 20 of them for free, which was great. We could take a new color out every night, which is just a fun thing to do. Although, not always the easiest to manage. The first car though, that I think when I really made it, it was more on the, when I finally made it on the DJ side, because I kind of learned the industry side before my DJ career took off. I was always DJing, but that took off a little later on with actually Game producing a lot of his mixtapes and things, which kind of set me up for, put me visibly, I guess, as a DJ out into that world. The first car that I got, and I think still the car that I've had the most fun with in my life to this day, was the 6 Series convertible, the BMW. So I had a 645, the drop top. I had a white one with like a dark gray top, and I put like sound system in the back, and you know, I forget what I was, 20, 21 years old, like driving that car in LA, right? Convertible, like white BMW at the time. It was a pricey, like one of those nice ones too. Like I had so much fun in that car, and I felt like, yeah, I'd really made it at that point. So that was probably the one.
Did the Game give you some respect on that car?
I think he did. Yeah. Okay. I think everybody respected that one. They were like, damn, it's cool. Actually, we put a Black Wall Street logo on the back sticker on the BMW. Instead of that, we changed the BMW B to the Black Wall Street looking V one. So it looked really, it was like, for me, it's always the subtle details with cars. So man, that was a fun one. I love that one.
Yeah. It's the Game actually lived down the street from my best friend growing up in Glendale.
He was
over there in Glendale at the
time. I remember.
But
I spent many hours over there.
Saw always the cars out there, all the black cars.
I remember having to pick him up and taking those cars out too. And Game had a great car collection. So he'd let me take out I remember driving his Bentley Flying Spur for a bit, the 4-door black Bentley. Yeah, like I was like, damn, this is the life, right?
So, you know, you've done a lot of interviews yourself, you know, on, you know, several different platforms. Who was your favorite person that you've interviewed?
Ooh, man, there's been so many great interviews, like, especially once you start getting to know these people. I was just talking about the other night, like, I had a great one because I just saw him. So, I mean, there's so many, so it's an impossible question to name. But I think, you know, one that just comes to memory is, you know, we had, I'd say actually two, one, and they were both around the same time, was with Busta. Mm. And that's when he got into his whole history in high school. And like, I didn't realize the extent, and you can still see these videos online. He really got into like how he, DMX and Jay-Z were in like the same high school, like all this crazy stuff. And basically, you know, kind of all came up together in the early battles and went so deep in the history and was so, so heartfelt. Like he was like, man, that was one of the best interviews he came up after. Like that was incredible. And like hearing, like finding those things that you didn't know, right? And getting somebody, especially somebody that's done as many interviews with us, to like come out and talk about like all these things in probably one of the most cohesive ways that he ever has was amazing. Same thing I remember with Raekwon at the same time. We had just such a good interview where he went through a bunch of that history. But then like, going back and forth, we've done so much with Snoop over the years, right? Like there's been some iconic stuff there where he's opened up. We did something in the card world where, you know, it was really fun. We showed him, somebody just posted something yesterday, so it's top of mind, where I was pulling out all these sports cards, and not only were we talking about the value of the cards, but he was talking about like his stories. He's like, I'd pull out a Tom Brady card. He's like, oh, Tommy Five Fingers. Oh, I remember, like, you know, in Snoop's way, he's like, I remember, you know, after they won the third one, I did the Super Bowl party and I brought him up, and he's like telling the story on all these players. Oh, Dion, that's my boy. I remember this. Like, I was like, wow, it was just really cool hearing his perspective on all these players that he had, you know, a relationship with. Obviously, Kobe, all that stuff. So that was a really fun one too.
I'm glad that you brought up cards, but let's just, for the audience, you've done for a few years now. Yeah. You worked with Topps, right? Yep. How did they approach you? How did that happen? Yeah.
So Topps, I did this artist program in 2020 during the pandemic called Right When Cards Exploded. It was kind of in the middle of it. And one of the reasons they did, where they brought in all these artists, Ben Baller was one of them who we just talked about, but people like Mr. Cartoon, all these just incredible artists to kind of design their own cards. They brought me in to create some content and to interview all those guys. And I think Cartoon was the first one I did. Cartoon's like family. He has probably one of the craziest lowrider and car collections in the world stuff. So, you know, I started creating some content with them and I was like, hey, if you guys ever do anything else, the top guys, like another program, like I'd love, like talk to me. I loved cards. I loved sports. And sure enough, they reached out and were like, hey, we're doing it again this year. We're going to expand it to 70 artists. Do you want to do? And I was like, hell yeah. And then, you know, I came up with this concept. It kind of brought me back to, you know, I really got known doing mixtapes as a DJ. And as a mixtape DJ, you're making your own covers in Photoshop and just throwing all these things in. So it's kind of like remixing like movie covers and all that. And I kind of did the same with cards where I basically would remix album covers with athletes and tie it in and created these really cool concepts that went on to be, I think, like the second best-selling card of that entire series. But it was, it's been so much fun creating those things, especially coming with, you know, remixing, you know, combining the worlds that I love, music and sport.
Yeah, and for an audience that probably doesn't know, but you actually own a card shop in Hollywood, right?
Yep. We got Cards and Coffee.
So was that before or after, or was that kind of how?
It was around the same time. Maybe it was a little before, but around the same time. Yeah.
Okay. And how long have you been collecting cards?
Man, it was actually my first business when I was like 6-7 years old, right? Like, so that's what I got into. So I'd been into it forever, but then like many others and, you know, recently resurfaced the past decade, like, especially as you get the means and you get more successful and, the nostalgia of the childhood, like remember, like memories that you're craving, like it really brought that back to the forefront for me. And I saw that, you know, there was a lot of energy happening in that memorabilia and that collectible sector and really went all in on it. So. Yeah.
I was the same way, collecting super young and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, now that you're older, you want to get the stuff that you couldn't get when you were.
Exactly. Yeah. You nailed it. Yep.
I mean, just like cars, you know?
Yep. 100%.
You're starting to see these 90s and late 80 cars values just skyrocket.
Yeah.
Just like in the car world.
Because now the people that wanted it and dreamed of it can afford it and there's competition. So.
Yeah. Speaking of sports again, so what are your teams?
Ooh, it's, you know, hardcore, I'll always be, you know, because I grew up in Minnesota, so, and that was like my formative years, so I'll always be diehard, like Twins, Vikings, Timberwolves and stuff, for better or worse, right? Like, hopefully we can switch things around.
Like Garnett.
Man, that was the era.
Hunter from Twins.
Yeah, like all those things. Like I think it was because when we first moved to Minnesota, I think in 90 or 91, and that's when the Twins won the last Minnesota men's sports championship in a major sport was 91 Twins, unfortunately. But being there and witnessing that, especially as like a 5-year-old kid, right? Yeah. It's like the coolest thing in the world. So like watching that as a kid is really what got me hooked on sports and why I think I've always been, you know, obsessed and in love with it. So
top 10 athletes of all time.
Oh, it's a tough one. Let's see. I mean, we'll start with Minnesota guys. So we'll go Garnett, Randy Moss, Kirby Puckett, like the top three from those teams. Let's throw in Adrian Peterson, another Vikings legend. Yeah. That's a tough one. There's so many. Ken Griffey Jr., of course. MJ. So where are we at? 6 right there. Man, it's tough. There's so many great ones. I'm trying to think across like baseball, basketball. I mean, maybe I even throw, for me, like as a kid, I love Stephon Marbury from that. So let's throw him in there. Man, because that era, that KG Marbury era, it hurt. Like, I've never been as depressed as when they traded Marbury and when that broke up. There's so many good ones. Man, it's a tough one. I could even isolate it
you named enough.
By sport. There's so much good ones.
What's the number one sport you would have to say is like?
Probably baseball, believe it or not. Everybody thinks it's football, but for me, baseball was like my foundation. It's what I played too. So that's what it was. Like, I love football, love basketball. Like, those are my big three. But if I had to choose one, it's baseball. I love just turning it on the background, hearing the sound of crack. There's nothing better than going to the ballpark. It's something that I feel like I could play. Like football, I couldn't. I always joked. It was funny. I'd always like, hey, I remember going to a USC game with Mike Williams, and he's a legend there.
Yep.
And I was always joking with him. I was like, let me get in one play. Like, let me get in one play. I went there, and it was high school recruiting day. And this is college, right? And they're bringing in the high school guys. And I'm sitting next to these high school guys. They're like bigger than me. I'm like, oh no, I'm good. I don't even want to be out for one play. So I couldn't do football and basketball. I'm tall, but not quite tall enough. Other people are better. Yeah. Baseball is the one that I feel like, all right, I could compete a little bit, right? Yeah. So, but that was always, you know, my true love, I think.
Yeah. Same for me. Baseball, in my opinion, is probably the one sport that hasn't changed.
Yeah.
And, you know, basketball and football has changed
different
a little
games,
bit.
Yeah. It's changed, you know, changed so much. I love it all,
it's
right?
It's not, yeah. It's not how I used to be, but yeah. Baseball somehow stays the same.
And it's on every, like, summer. It's just how, like, every day, just turn it on, even if it's in the background, right? Like, it's that consistency, and it's almost like becomes habitual and like a routine, and it's like a comfort source. It's calm and chill, and those same, like, things that make it boring are what make it so exciting in October. So,
I mentioned NASCAR.
Yeah.
Do you follow any other motorsports like Formula One or any of that?
Yeah, I got into F1. I went out to, they brought me out to Abu Dhabi probably, I think, 5 or 6 years ago for the championship out there. And ever since then, I knew about F1, but then started paying more attention to it. And obviously with the recent explosion, I've been all over that. I've gone out to Miami. I actually didn't go to Vegas this year, but hopefully it's warmer next year and I'll go.
Nicer weather.
But yeah, love F1. I mean, I love everything. Like, I've gone to some of the IndyCar stuff, like, it's really fun. I just love cars, right? Like, I love, just sport and cars in general, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's just, no matter what, it's fun. Like, I love even, like, watching, like, the 24-hour races. Like, I think are so cool. So, like, I'm just a fan of anything sports and anything, and obviously even anything motorsports, too.
What would you say is the most memorable moment you had involving sports? Would it be throwing the first pitch? Or what would you say?
I'll say it's weird. So I've been doing the Viking stuff for a while, mm-hmm. but the greatest moment was when I lost all hope, I think it was 2018 or whatever. I thought the game was over in the playoffs against the Saints, and then they throw the Minnesota Miracle. Stephon Diggs catches it, runs to the end zone. You know, greatest play in Vikings history, meant one of the greatest plays in NFL history, even though it wasn't Super Bowl or anything. It just meant so much. The fact that I was there and working and on field, and right after the game, the first person Diggs ran up to was me, and I've got a video of us together. Oh, wow. Like, what did you do? Like, that was the most electric. Cool. That's probably the best moment of my life. So, like, that was just so electric and so iconic. That was probably it. Other than that, like, there's been so many fun moments. Like, obviously, like, DJing NASCAR at the Coliseum, mm-hmm. the first time there was a race, and like figuring out, like, when do we play? Like, we're playing during cautions, during the race, but not like while they were actually racing, but like mm-hmm. figuring out the cadence and how to compete against the engines and those things has been fun. Doing Michigan, right? Like, the biggest venue, second biggest venue in the world. Only bigger one, stadium, I think, is a cricket venue in India. But like, performing at the Big House, especially the first time I went out there, and they were underdogs against Ohio State. Snow's coming down.
The biggest rival, like one
biggest
of the best.
Rivalry ever.
In college. Yeah.
And that's what turned the program, right? And I remember going out there, and there's a couple things. Like, Michigan was actually ranked higher, but they were 9-point underdogs, I think 8.5-point underdogs. And I was looking at that on the plane. I was like, oh my God, these guys might lose. It was my first game there. I was like, this is going to be bad. I'm never going to be invited back. And so the opposite happened. And I remember before it, I was like, all right, they'd never had any performances, never had a DJ during the game or anything. It's like, I'm all good as long as it doesn't snow or rain. Like, they're like, no chance, the forecast, blah, blah, blah. This is the night before. Like, all right, I mean, you sure? I said, no, we're good. It's going to snow after. Like, okay, cool. We get there, 11 o'clock, doors open, or sorry, 10 o'clock or whatever. Snow starts coming down instantly. So I had to take some player's jersey that wasn't, and cover my laptop and like type under that and hope the whole game that it wouldn't short out. Luckily it didn't. And then they won, and the rest became history. Been with them the last couple of years. They won mm-hmm. the championship this year. We beat Ohio State last 3 years, and every game that I've been there, they've won. So I'll be a little good luck charm. I'm debating retiring at this point because you can't get any higher. But
they
want
to keep bringing you back then, huh?
Yeah, it's tough.
How did that start?
Harbaugh's team reached out. They saw the entertainment that I was doing for Minnesota, and Minnesota was winning best game day entertainment, the NFL, all those years. And we're just like really electrifying the crowd and kind of reinventing, you know, way performances and DJs were using that, right? Like, we wanted to make it like a key part of the show. And I mean, the Vikings organization's been so great. They built me incredible stages and really entrusted me to help everything, create content, but like really, you know, bridge a gap between a new generation and demographic and the team and leverage music and lifestyle content. So we saw what we did there, and we'd been talking actually, then the pandemic happened. So we never did anything. And then 2021, after the pandemic,
ended up being good. And they hit me early in the season. We were going to do something. We couldn't make my schedule and those things work. And then 2 weeks ago, two weeks before the Ohio State game, they called and they were like, this is it. This is everything. We're like, let's go. We got to get you out here. And I was like, all right, cool. Like, let's go out. And the rest is history. And from that's cool. How it's expanded to fortunately working with other teams, like helping the LA Rams now, which is awesome. It's like, you know, family now. And, you know, of course, Vikings are always, no matter what, like I could, you know, get shot by them and I'll still love them. I've been through those things, but it's great. Like I love the Rams team and that's like, you know, as long as they're not playing the Vikings, I'm the Rams are my team. I knew Sean McVay a little bit before and some of the players, it's great. And so they're a home team and working with other teams and leagues and players, it's just fun. I just love sports, right? Yeah. So Mike's, it's really just my excuse to go to games.
I mean, that's a good excuse right there. Now that you're getting more successful, it looks like you've been investing in a lot of companies. You were able to get early on some companies. I'm sure it stems back, going back to your flipping days, you know. But now, you know, with the bigger outcome. But what were some of the companies you had the opportunity or fortunate enough to get in?
Don't mind
sharing.
Yeah, no, 100%. For me, it's my one skill, I'd say, is always like kind of identifying trends early on, going back to T-Mobile Sidekick, Daimler Chrysler, picking artists and signing them, just seeing where things were happening, selling sneakers. Like you have to choose the right model, right? So some of the early ones were like StockX, which was fortunate for enough to get in on, and it's become like the biggest, you know, sneaker resale marketplace in the world. I invested in Liquid Death recently, or not recently, but like a while ago, but watching them grow has just been incredible. Based out here in LA. Shout out to my guy Peter over there who brought me in on that deal. I launched a fund called Mint 10 where we invested a lot in the collectible space. So through that we invested in Whatnot and in Alton Insights and in Genement that got acquired by PSA and about 20 companies in the space, collects. So Magpie, it's been Wax Insurance, it's been a fun one to be involved in to see all that deal flow. Hotel Tonight got acquired by Airbnb, so that was fun. Wow. A bunch of like random ones. It's weird when you look down that list. Fever, which is an events company, they just hit significant valuation, which is great. But they produce, you'll see them doing tickets on a lot of your favorite events. It's been a fun ride. And most recently invested and founded a new memorabilia company called The Realist. So I'm most excited for that, to be honest.
Who was the inspiration for you to say, hey, you need like start investing your money? Or was there someone, or was it just strictly yourself?
Combination, like everything is witnessing others, right? My parents were not business people at all, never, claimed to be. They were educators and musicians and artists and things. So it didn't like come naturally. I realized early on, especially the era that I came up in music was when Napster was disrupting the music industry. So I came up like kind of out of necessity, is never looking at music itself as being the way to make money, but I looked at music as being my ticket into getting everywhere else, right? Like if I wasn't as high profile in music, Dan Gilbert wouldn't be calling me to invest in StockX, right? That's how I got the deal. Dan didn't need the money. He's a billionaire and he could go to a million other investors that wanted it. He wanted me because of I had a presence in the scene, right? And I could add value and I was a big sneaker collector and things like that. So I realized like my platform was everything came from music and that was the foundation, but I was like, I'm never going to make money from the music itself. So how do I diversify and get from that? So it's kind of been forced from that. Obviously the music industry has come back, but just the era that I grew up in was not that. So I learned the other way and then had incredible mentors that I met through the music industry, notably a guy, you know, Matt Mickelson, who's incredible to me and really brought me to the Valley and introduced me to so many people. I met him through music. Didn't work out for him or for me from those things. But, you know, we just stayed close and friends and he showed me, you know, how to, you know, he's one of the people that showed me how to diversify. And then just like from that meeting so many different people over my career and learning and embracing that and seeing where the value was, I realized that, like, again, like even with sports, anybody can buy a ticket, but not everybody's going to be in the field with Stefon Diggs. So like that was my advantage. So how do I play that in and leverage it to connect the dots as much as possible on other things?
What would you say, you know, just from hearing you talk thus far, it's networking is a very important thing, you know, it should be for everyone. But what's the best business advice you ever received?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of talking about that, like it's kind of cliche, but like your net worth is your network, right? Like I'm not the richest person. I'm not the, you know, I'm not going to, you know, there's always going to be people that beat you in that. But you know, I think there's very few that have as wide and varied a network, and it's trust over the years, right? Too, especially you do the right things and you connect with the right people and you bring them opportunities. You're not always looking for what your piece is and your cut. You're just doing the right things. That's what's I think given me such a long career, especially like music industry is fickle. You have a couple years now, especially in this TikTok generation. For me to be in this now 2 decades deep is wild and rare, but I think it's because of you know, A, doing the right thing and diversifying from that, but really, you know, building those networks and realizing where the power lies and trying to see those opportunities early on. So for me, it was really about building a network and then finding your lane, right? And what you do better than anybody else and not trying to be something that you're not. And that's how I can walk in the world between these sports team owners and billionaires to, you know, the latest artists from the streets, right? And get that same respect. You don't change or try to do anything that you're not. You find your lane and what makes you unique and you own that and you do the right things and it generally pays off.
Yeah. Great advice. Switching a little bit to cars, you know, I was recently on your Instagram and I saw you, one of very few owners of the Cybertruck.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
How did you get it? And how long have you been on the wait list?
I mean, I ordered mine instantly the moment I saw the announcement. I saw it was awesome. And, you know, I'd helped when Elon opened up the Gigafactory in Texas. Mm-hmm. I got a call from one of his people right before, like literally, I think the day they opened it, maybe the day before, they wanted to clear the song Still DRE for Elon to walk out to during that, which, you know, musical clearance is long, comprehensive process. It's not impossible, but clearing it the day before, especially a song like that, because that song is, it's Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg, but it's written by Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Jay-Z, Scott Storch, like all these writers, like getting, like, not going to happen, right? So I called Dre's people, called Snoop, called the head of Interscope, got it cleared, got it all written off, did those things, and the rest is history. So, you know, I, again, did it as a favor. And I was like, hey, guys, you know, I ordered this right away. What's up? Yeah. So I think it was, you know, a little bit of payment for those things. I never know. I just got the, you know, you just get the email and it came in, but was fortunate to be one of those first. But I did put in the work. I put in more work than anybody else for that and did miracles. So.
And how long have you been an owner of it so far?
I've had it for a month and a half now or something, I think. Okay. So yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, we have a great relationship here.
You guys have such an incredible Tesla exhibit. Exactly. I was actually disappointed because right after I got it, I came here. And then I pulled up and I was like, people are, I mean, everybody's looking at it, but I was like, not as much as everywhere else. I'm like, oh, they saw 3 of them inside, right?
Yeah, we were actually the first location after the botch of the window. And the 2 weeks later, we were the first public venue or whatever you want to say to have it. So
cool.
People were flying in from Florida, New York, just to view it. They're like,
so cool.
Just put my deposit in. I want to see it. So yeah.
And that's what I get. That's what everybody wants. Even when people like that car gets, I've driven Bugattis down Rodeo and stuff, right? And like those get 10% the attention that this thing does on any street. Like it's just insane. But a lot of people are like, I want to just see it before they get it. Cause it's, I mean, like, look, there's such, the demand far outpaces, you know, the supply right now. I'm still shocked they got that car to market, because we're just so used to seeing these incredible concepts that then come to life is like a watered down that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's basically the same, and it's actually like, and I'm not just saying this because I, like, I keep it real, like, it's a lot better than I thought it would be. I mean, on the inside, right? Like, the sound system is the best sound system I've ever heard in a car, which is like, I did not expect. And going back to like, even like my Range Rover with the high end, whatever 3D Meridian sound and stuff, like, was tough. Like I wanted to be back in there. Like, it's really a fun, it's big, but like it turns like the drive by wire is amazing. It's a really, like, I really enjoy driving it.
Wow. And I'm sure you're going to get more attention with the wrap. I just recently saw you got it wrapped. So
yeah, we did something a little different.
There you go. I think that's the nice thing about, you know, Tesla, because I've interviewed the head of design, Franz, and, you know, and I asked him the question. I was like, do you kind of like trip out to see all these, you know, custom Teslas that people do, you know, with all the different models? And he's like, you know, I design a car that's like a blank canvas.
It's so cool.
You know? Just throwing it out there and letting people just have their take.
You know? So cool. And that's what you should do, right? Like, and that's what this, and that's why, you know, Tesla, I was reading an article or a review, I think, of the Cybertruck, and it was interesting. They were like, and it really hit the nail on the head. It's like, one of the challenges that Tesla faces is some things might not be as native and intuitive compared to other cars, right? But they were like, they were almost made as like somebody had never driven a car, right? Like what you would do. So it's like, yeah, it's obvious, but going from another car can sometimes be a challenge in terms of like the way mirror placements are, the way that like certain buttons or functionality work. But it's really done from like, forget the rules. Like, what do we do? And I think the same thing with aesthetics, right? Like this generation wants to make things their own. Even me, I'm like, I have the crazy, like the Cybertruck's the craziest looking vehicle on the road, and there's not many out there, right? And even for me, I'm like, nah, I still want to add my own like details. And like, dude, I spent so much time just thinking on the design and the colors. And for me, it's like the little details, because it's really like a three-tone wrap. Like I put black on the top, then teal on the side, then I did like another barrier on the bottom, and then I added like a cyber ski logo and ghost over, like all these little details that might be subtle that people aren't thinking of. But to me, it's always like the little things that make the biggest difference. It's like Virgil talks about that 3% difference, like adjusting something 3% is all you need to do to make it that massive difference. But I think like Tesla really understands this consumer in this generation, because they're not burdened by legacy infrastructure and those things. And I think that's, they've used it to their, for the most part, it's been beneficial for that company. And that's why Honda's designing like that, right? Like,
yeah, definitely. You mentioned a sound system. So when you're in the car, as an artist, musician, what do you listen to?
Everything, right? I mean, like if it's work, right? Like you're doing your, like there's so many times I've reference checks, mixes, and you want to hear them in different studios. Dre had one of the best pieces of advice is he would always find who had the worst car in the, like what engineer or assistant or somebody had like the worst car in the lot and go play it in there. Cause like if it bangs in here, it will bang in a big system. Which is, it's easy to get distracted and makes a mix that sounds great on the best system in the world. But you got to remember, most people are listening to it in something far less superior, actually out of like phone speakers or AirPods now. Yeah. So I think like, for me, it's obviously like referencing mixes and those things, but in casual time, I mean, like I literally listen to everything from like, if you were to go look in the Cybertruck, right? Like see the recently played, it would be of course like everything from rap caviar to Afro beats to country. Even I've been listening to a little now, which I never really did until recently, to pop, to of course, like I have my stuff of just stuff that I've collected over the years, to Andrea Bocelli, right? Like I was just out in Philly with him. So it's probably as eclectic as it comes.
So you mentioned cars and all of that, but what's that one dream car that you really want that you haven't?
You know what car I always wanted, and it's the worst car to drive to, but it's so cool, is the, you know, Carrera GT. Like that's always been like from that moment, like I've always just, that's been such a cool, but there's so many, right? And it changes the wind. What, you know what you got? My favorite car right now, the craziest one that I never saw that you guys have, is that old school, hold on, let me pull up a picture of it. It's the old school, it's giant Rolls Royce that you guys have. What model is that?
So that's the Phantom.
Is that the oh, but not like a new Phantom. No, this is no. Like the 19.
Yeah, so it's 1930. Yeah. Yeah, 20. It got rebodied. So it's like 20 something, 30.
That's but, the craziest
it's,
car.
It's, yeah. You're not the first person to say that on the podcast, but really? It's the Round Doors Rolls Royce.
Yeah, hold on. I'm pulling up a picture of it right now. It's so cool. So that might be
22 feet long.
It's just insane, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm looking at it right now. So like, that is up there on the top of the list. You know, it's funny. I always want, and I just looking at pictures when I walk through the Peterson, I always wanted a DeLorean, but then I like back off and everybody like likes it, but then they like, it's underpowered and those things. And then you own it and you're like,
it's very similar to the Cybertruck.
It looks it too.
It's still futuristic. I mean, the movie definitely helped it out, but like,
I was actually thinking of like, how do I do a DeLorean? My initial idea for the Cybertruck wrap was how, before I did the, like the teal black, the triple black one was, how do I, or triple tone one was, how do I, make a DeLorean / Nike Air Mag designed one, right? With those like silvers and blues. I was like, do I put the little like dials and colors and gauges and stuff right in the back, the orange from Back to the Future? Because that car reminded me so much of it. I just couldn't come up with a design that I liked, like from a wrap that stood out from those things. But like that's always been there. I mean, I'm trying to think. I actually really like the new Spectre right now. I can't wait to drive it. I haven't driven it yet. That's an incredibly beautiful, just well done car, especially for an electric Rolls Royce.
They also just announced today, I'm not sure, Tesla, the the Roadster is going to do.
They announced it finally? Well, I thought that was dead.
No, it's actually Elon just said it's going to do 0-60 in 1 second.
It's insane. So, is it ever coming out? I mean, yeah, low test. We'll see. Apparently it is. Yeah. They hadn't talked about it in a while. You guys have one downstairs.
Yeah, and we actually had another one on display about 2-3 years ago after the Cybertruck.
That's going to be a crazy car too. Like, I mean, just it's so crazy just looking at how incredible, especially with electric cars, like what's out there. I mean, I still love electric cars, are most comfortable, like daily drivers. I don't think I'll ever go back to a gas car, but still like in the track and stuff, there's nothing like an engine, right?
Oh no. Yeah.
So,
I mean, yeah, if you go to the track, like that's what brings, you know, smiles to the face is just like hearing that,
yeah,
but we'll see.
And then other cars, I'll say two other ones that came to my mind. Project One, Mercedes, like that's just such a crazy car. And then, and I've always loved Mercedes. And then they never came out with it. There was that two-door concept Range Rover that they canceled. That car was fire. I loved that one.
If you had to work with a manufacturer, manufacturer, who would it be?
Ooh, that's tough because there's like different reasons. It's like, yeah, of course you want to work with like Bugatti or something insane, like something exotic, but that's like you actually want to do something a little more mainstream. I would probably choose, I love BMW. I've owned so many BMWs over the years, and I think they do a really good job. Porsches are Porsches. Like I've gone out and done some work with Porsche Classic at the Atlantic facility out there, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. Mercedes, I've had some of my best. And Tesla, obviously, right now with like the Cybertruck is incredible, and nobody's really done a collab. I think they could do something. There's a lot of room to work with there, as you know. That's a tough one, man. Like,
might have to team up with Will I Am and get on the Mercedes. Right?
I know, it's wild. It's a tough one. I don't know if I could choose. I still love, like, even Aston Martin, like, just the brand. Like, when you think of, like, history and the brand and the look and what it means.
I mean, you could just tell you're a true car guy. It doesn't really matter.
That's why I'm like, if anybody came to me, I'd do something, right? Like, I just love looking at cars. Like, I even love, like, all the new Kias look amazing to me and stuff. Like, I'm like, there's so many. We're in this era. We're so lucky. There's not really a bad car. Like, when I was growing up, you're like, that one's not going to last. That one's not that good. People don't think about that anymore. Like, every car is really good. But, you know, and I've been thinking about it. I didn't even mention, like, my favorite, like, daily driver car of all time. If I could only have one car and they were like that, it would be a Range Rover. Like, that's always been my favorite. When I moved out here, they'd come out with the 2003 Range Rover. It was $80,000. I thought that was more money than I'd ever make in my life. And I was like, could never afford that. And then was fortunate enough to get one, if not, like, the first of the refresh body style, and like, whatever it was, 2012, maybe. And then recently got one, if not the first, when they refreshed it again. So, like, just love that car. Like, the Range Rover to me is...
It's the best driving position
ever. It's just the best. I've had... Yeah. Don't like the G-Wagons as much. Like, I take a Range Rover all day. Like, that might be it. Just, if I had to... I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, past listeners know that I actually... one of my cars I have is a first-gen Range Rover. Ooh. You know, early 91. But so sick. Even then, they really haven't changed the position. You know, it's always, you're always looking down the road.
The best.
It is the best.
So comfortable. The great. Oh, you can take it anywhere. I love going skiing, right? So you can pull it out. You can drive it up to Mammoth or Big Bear, wherever you're going for a day trip. It's great. Super comfortable. It's always just really well done. And I've never had any real, like, always just little issues, and I've never had any big issues, and it's just so beautiful. So.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, just wrapping it up. Just one question. I'm going to kind of put you on the spot.
Let's go.
How do you want to be remembered as a creative?
Ooh, I think for me at this point, it's like legacy is how much you put other people on, right? And how much you empower others and what you change for the world. What I've realized is no matter what we do now, I always say, like, it's a funny question, right? Like if I was to ask you, what's the most important job in the world or memorable? You'd probably say what? President?
Yeah.
So then who was the president 100 years ago?
Sure.
Exactly. Like, it's like, all right, if somebody's not going to remember, like, offhand, the most important person in the world is as recently as 100 years ago, and you look at how long the world has been around, like, I'm getting really deep philosophically, like, then what is anything that we're making? Like, we're making music and selling cars. Like, it's cool, but it doesn't really matter in the scheme of things. So I think the best mark is how you leave, you know, leaving this earth better than you came into it. And I think for what that means is like empowering others to be their best so they can do that and spread those wings. And also, like, I was like, look, I'm a kid from Minneapolis and that made it and I was living this incredible dream out here in Hollywood and LA. And if I can do it, and there's people far smarter, like anybody can do it, right? Like, it's really... you know, I really believe that. And I don't think a lot of people have that belief in myself. I was fortunate my parents really raised me and like let me like, oh, encourage me. Like I had that encouragement enough. But, you know, I think empowering others to be in situations and helping them out so they can be better than you. And then hopefully they do the same to others. That's what's most important to me and what I hope my legacy comes down for. So,
well, thank you for being on Car Stories.
Man, thank you for having me.
Just
this is great.
For our audience, if they want to learn more about you, where can they find you?
Yeah, check me out. You can just djski.com or at djski on social media. Latest venture is The Realist. So you go to The Realist, The Real, T-H-E-R-E-A-L-E-S-T. So TheRealEST.com. We actually authenticated one of the cars here in the showroom. We're an authentication company where we are doing like line of sight authentication for sports, music, film, and TV. So you see an item that Snoop Dogg is wearing on stage or, you know, and you can now buy that and own that or take a set list home or, you know, take a basketball from your favorite game or a net or a piece of the court or a car, right? Like there's, we authenticated the car from Ocean's 11, which is down there, put that on display here, which is amazing, right? So to have our stickers there is sick. So, you know, because we think like a lot of these things are just not being valued. Like that's just going to be sold as the Thunderbird that it is. We're like, no, this is the one from Ocean's 11.
I saw the sticker, sorry, but I didn't put two and two together. Yeah. Wow.
Okay. So yeah, we're out there. Cool. We're working. So we just launched that. So I'm really excited about that. So yeah, check that out. We've got some fun projects coming soon. So
awesome. DJ Ski, thank you.
Yeah, of course. And hopefully a car collab someday. So if some car companies out there hearing me, like I'm down, like I just love cars. I'll work with whatever.
There you go. The word's out. But everyone, thanks again for joining on another Peterson Car Story podcast. I am Daniel and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.